Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and right on schedule, March is coming in like a lion in Hawaii. The forecast for Hilo, Hawaii today is rain and 78 degrees. The forecast for Central Park on my weather app is rain and 72 degrees on March 1st, continuing our winter without winter. And recently we heard the stats that 2016 was the warmest year on record for the Earth as a whole, the third year in a row that the Earth set that record. Happy March from Hawaii on the Hudson. To mark the occasion, and with climate policy being dismissed as irrelevant in Washington now, I thought we might get a little refresher on the basic science of global warming for our general education, or maybe to use the next time you're at a party with our new EPA chief, Scott Pruitt. For this, we've called on Peter Domenical, Dean of Science at Columbia University and director of their new Center for Climate and Life, part of the Columbia University Earth Institute. At Columbia, as you sports fans know, every month comes in like a lion. So, Dr. Domenical, thanks for doing this, and welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much for having me again, Brian. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Do you use the terms climate change and global warming interchangeably?
I do in loose conversation, but really what we're talking about now is climate change in very specific terms about how it impacts people. I think that's the most effective way to talk about it because no one lives the mean annual temperature of the planet, which is increasing.
Well, what's the curve of warming that leads scientists to believe it's a man-made phenomenon rather than a natural cycle?
Right. That's a great question. And so we've been measuring the temperature of the Earth for about 150 years. And that thermometer record, which is based on tens of thousands of measurements over time, shows that there's this steady increase in temperatures that's occurred, especially over our lifetimes in just the most recent decades. And the essential point is that 16 of the last 17 years of this millennium, or this century rather, have been the warmest ever measured in that entire instrumental record.
How much warming has actually taken place so far compared to, say, 1950?
Right, so it's about a degree of centigrade of warming, and relative to what we call the pre-industrial baseline, it's about a degree 0.2 centigrade.
And how evenly is that warming distributed around the globe? Is it?
Right, so that's a great question, and when Senator Inhofe brought a snowball to the Senate floor, it's important to separate weather from climate. Weather is what you get, and climate is what you expect. So, we do see this increase in temperatures, but it is distributed differently around the planet, and we especially see accelerated warming at the poles.
What are the most obvious effects of global warming to date that have a real impact on humans or other species?
Right. So the surface temperature, that curve that we've all seen, one could argue, and I think it's a point well taken, that no one really lives that temperature. What we live are the extremes. And to be sure, our experience of the extremes has increased, both in terms of the number of heat waves relative to cold temperatures. In fact, for February, that ratio of record warm versus record cold was 100 to 1. So this just gives you an idea of just how extreme things can be, but also in the damages that come from extremes, such as flooding and hurricanes that become more destructive. And if one doesn't want to believe the climate data, all you have to do is turn to the insurance and reinsurance industry, and there's a very easy plot that can be shown there. But, of course, the impact on crops, crop yields decrease by 5 to 10% due to these heat waves that come through. Something that's probably not common to or not well known to many of your listeners is that we quietly announced that the rate of sea level rise increased by a factor of 2 in just the last decade relative to the last century.
How variable are the models for how much further the world might change from now to the rest of this century?
Right. So the model projections extending now and into the decades ahead have a great agreement with the observations. So if we just look at the last 30 or 40 years, the models match the observations, but there's quite a bit of variability on that. But what we do see for the decades ahead is an acceleration of the warming trend that we've experienced already. So for those who are old enough to know what it was like earlier in their lives relative to what it's like now, and they can feel that difference, that phenomenon of noticing the warming temperatures in the greater extremes will accelerate into the future. And the models have a great deal of agreement. That is not to say the models are perfect. It's not to say that our crystal ball of the future is absolutely clear. There's a lot of questions to remain, but there's no debate on the direction of the change. That is, things are getting warmer and more extreme and more variable.
On this March 1st, headed for about 70 degrees in the New York area, we're doing Global Warming 101 with Peter Domenical, Dean of Science at Columbia University and director of their new Center for Climate and Life, part of the Columbia University Earth Institute, part of the winter without winter that we've been having, and a 70-degree March 1st coming this afternoon, we're told. So why do people believe this could be catastrophic? You talked about 1 degree of warming so far on average. It's more than 10 degrees warmer on average in Florida, for example, than it is here, and people live there just fine, except when they try to vote, but that's another show. So why is this 1 or 2 degrees a big deal?
So the 1 or 2 degrees is a big deal because actually what separated us from the last ice age was just about 5 degrees of centigrade for the global mean temperature. So it's really important to separate the temperature weirdness that you get in a given zip code versus the temperature weirdness you get for an entire planet. And so when you're talking about warming the entire planet, it's, a planet that's also covered by 70% ocean, so you're warming the oceans as well. And so, what's catastrophic about a degree of warming is that we believe the threshold for a temperature warming threshold beyond which we don't want to exceed. The reason why there exists a threshold is that's the temperature at which we believe there's runaway melting of ice sheets, whereby rising sea levels destabilize ice sheets even more, so they melt even more. And so you get this accelerated, what we call a nonlinear feedback.
There's a news story today that Warren Buffett said his insurance company, Berkshire Hathaway, has not figured a global warming premium into their insurance policies generally because despite Hurricane Sandy and other events, the evidence of heightened systematic risk for whoever it is they insure has just not been there yet. Are they looking in the wrong place?
No, I think we have a number of systems. For example, the U.S. taxpayers are covering the expense of the coastal flood insurance that allows people to keep on rebuilding houses in areas that get destroyed by hurricanes and severe flooding. And so, if you were to imagine that socialized cost disappearing, even in the current administration, a lot of the incentive that goes into rebuilding on these locations would disappear, and there'd be a managed and thoughtful building plan along the coastline. So the global insurance companies, the global reinsurance companies, are very interested in climate change. In fact, they were the first adopters of bringing scientists into their fold to help them develop better actuarial models for their loss profiles as it relates to weather and climate change patterns.
I've read that carbon emissions are actually at a 25-year low right now, that they've been going down in recent years due to factors including natural gas replacing coal and oil in the marketplace quite a bit and from the Great Recession. Are carbon emissions, I guess, from this country really at a 25-year low?
They're not at a 25-year low, but they are decreasing. And in fact, actually, this is, it's important not to always be Dr. Doom and Gloom on this. It's important to see where there is a silver lining, where there is real change going on. And this is one of the areas. I mean, you can look at the world's largest economies, including the United States, and if you look at the last century or so, there's a perfect correlation or near perfect correlation between carbon emissions per capita, over a year, versus GDP growth. And that relationship became decoupled. In other words, that correlation fell apart in about the last 3 or 4 years. And that's true for many EU countries and other countries as well. And that's signaling basically that the introduction of renewable energy sources, the introduction of cleaner fossil fuel sources such as natural gas, are having a very real impact that allow us to still have the same level of economic growth but with a much lower carbon footprint. And that's something we've known for a long time. And this is all happening without a price on carbon.
If that's the case, and this has been going on for years now, why do we keep having the warmest year on record year after year?
Boy, that's a great question. So the reason why we're warming, and in fact, even if we were to shut off the taps on carbon dioxide to the atmosphere now, the Earth would still continue to warm. And that's because there's heating that's kind of baked into the system by our historical carbon emissions. So the heating that we're experiencing now, the anomalous warmth that we're feeling now, is not the result of carbon emissions today. It's the carbon emissions that have accumulated in the atmosphere over the decades and even centuries into the past. And so there's this, it's a little like a credit card debt. You know, it's something that comes up and bites you in the end, and that's sort of what's happening now.
This is a Science 101 segment, but let me throw in a little bit of politics. President Trump has said he accepts that something is happening with the climate, but also that there was a scandal involving scientists puffing the data, which, of course, got a lot of press. How bad was that scandal?
Well, the scandal doesn't exist. This never happened in terms of scientists puffing up the data or scientists modifying the data. And you know, if someone wants to check that independently, there's a group called BEST, B-E-S-T. It's the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Team. And they were funded, actually, by the Koch brothers, in part, to do a complete reanalysis of all the temperature data, independent, involving none of the government agencies or none of the other university agencies that might that have been impugned in this. Dredging that happened. And that group came out with a very spectacular conclusion that the global temperature curve that they produced independently with their own, what they call A-plus team, exactly matched to within the hundredth of the degree area the temperature records that have been put together by the United States, by NASA, and by European agencies as well. And so, you know, I would challenge that claim vigorously that there's been any, modification or altering of climate data to get this agenda. And, you know, it's something that can be discounted, but we waste our breath talking about it because everyone knows that climate is changing. It's not something to be debated. We can argue about what the impacts are, but climate is absolutely changing, and even, you know, the greatest skeptics can look at it and say, yeah, okay, that's unusual.
And a skeptic might say 97% of scientists agree. That's the stat we always hear.
Yep.
That man-made global warming is real. But 97% of scientists once thought the Earth was flat and that carbs didn't cause heart disease. So how do you guard against people dismissing all of science with references from history like those?
Right. So, one of the things that's, I think, important to keep in mind is that, the temperatures that we see, we can actually have, we can actually measure the surface of the Earth and see just how unusual it is. And so this idea of consensus also gives some people a very uncomfortable feeling that there's this gang of people who are all agreeing that something's happening. The reality is that, 99.999% of people agree that gravity is what keeps their feet on the ground. And if some 0.001% of the person says no, it's because of some other, space aliens in the center of the Earth, do you take that notion seriously? And no, we don't. Why don't we? Because experience tells us so. And we have an understanding for how gravity works, and it explains many things, including satellites and other things. Climate change has that same authenticity and that same weft and weave of fundamental observations combined with basic science to explain the phenomena that we observe.
Well, we thought with weeks of unseasonably warm temperatures now, and here a forecast of 70 degrees this afternoon on March 1st, which is supposed to come in like a lion, and all of this intersecting with the change of administration in Washington and a big downgrading of global warming policy, we thought it was a good time for a little refresher course on the basic science of global warming. And for that, we thank Peter Domenical, Dean of Science at Columbia University and director of their new Center for Climate and Life, part of the Columbia University Earth Institute. So interesting. Thank you very much. I know people learned a lot.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.